Days, well, David Peacock, tonight's market commentator, will remember the days of a deposit book. And then about 40 years ago, electronic banking arrived and ATMs meant that you could go and draw cash when you wanted it. And you could, if there was a queue, you'd stand at the queue, but you wouldn't have to talk to another human being. And you could do it at a time that suited you. We saw the evolution of banking products then, and about 20 years ago, there was this crazy idea that maybe one day everyone will bank on the internet. And so we started internet banking, and adoption was massively slow. Nobody really wanted to do it. They didn't trust this idea that you could leave the branch and sit at home and do your banking. And it took a long time for acceptance to happen. And until then, you were gradually forced out of the branches, basically, because the banks made it so blim and expensive to transact via them in the branches and relatively cheaper electronically. And then you look at it now and it's almost impossible to deal with a teller in a branch because banks have turned themselves into advice centers with ATMs. So many bank branches you go into now, you don't have tellers stand behind windows. There's an ATM and there's somebody who'll sell you a home loan or give you some financial advice or whatever the case is. So their function is changing. And besides, most of your banking nowadays is probably done via an app, and the apps are universally brilliant. But this does have consequences. For you, it's convenience like there's never been before, and that's good. It's far more cost effective. And you can do your banking anywhere, anytime you'd like. Most of us haven't been to a bank branch in ages, and I was trying to recall today when I last went to a bank branch for something that I couldn't do out of a bank branch, and it was to get some foreign exchange probably 4 years ago. Yeah, probably. And then, you know, you tuck it into deep into your trouser pocket and walk very fast because, you know, somebody may have seen you. So you're paranoid about going to the bank branch anyway. But it's leading to the scaling back in terms of the size and the purpose of bank branches. And in many cases, a huge reduction in the number of bank branches. Standard Bank this year, of course, controversially, not really, but people took it badly, 100 bank branches being closed. Even their Adderley Street branch, that flagship branch, the beautiful sandstone building in Adderley Street in Cape Town, once its global headquarters, has been closed now for 5 years. And it's empty. They don't know what to do with it. And that's a great pity. I've got some ideas, but nobody's listening. More than a third of UK bank branches have closed since 2015. And in the US, more than 10,000 bank branches. 10,000 bank branches in the US have closed since 2012. So it's a global phenomenon. In South Africa, though, banking unions have suddenly woken up to the risk of the fact that technology is replacing people. And Kokkie Kwaiman is the head of global equities at Denker Capital, and he is on the line to us this evening. And he's an expert on the global banking environment. And, I mean, South African banking, I suppose, Kokkie, was taking strain long before the upstarts of Time and Discovery and Bank Zero, which is coming next year. They've been looking at ways of cutting costs probably for decades now.
Yeah, Marib, Bruce, you've actually almost summarised my talk.
Oh, sorry.
No. You did very well there. And you know, the banks are facing pressure from two sides. The one is obviously rising costs, and at the same time, it's an attack on their fees from both smaller players and, you know, things like blockchain and all kinds of, you know, the apps, et cetera, means that a lot of the easy profit margins have been taken away. So in addition, post-2008 crisis, they have to hold a lot more capital. So the pressure was really on to be more cost-effective. And what's really been happening recently, the last 5 years, that's accelerated, is banks are all trying to become what they call ecosystems, where they use the live data they have of their vast client base, and then they try and combine that and try and give a better service to a client, and then not only give him a mortgage loan or a credit card loan, but tie him into or her into all kinds of other services. It's interesting. I was just in Russia now visiting some of the Moscow banks, Sberbank. Well, it's a massive Russian bank. And amazingly, they are at the moment ahead, so far what we've found, ahead of the curve globally. And essentially what they've done, they've even tied up doctors into a network where so you can go through their app and make appointments with your doctor. So it's all online, and because all the doctors are connected to their network, and you go online and you book an appointment, and they automatically take the fee off your account. So, it's been rapidly changing.
It's rapidly changing, Corky, and I mean, unfortunately, the consequence of this is the human beings working in the old school banking world are feeling the pain of it, the brunt of it, and we see banks gradually cutting back on headcounts. The staff cost, of course, within any banking group, and banking groups in South Africa on average, I think, employ between 30,000 and 40,000 people, is a huge element of the costs, an absolutely enormous element, and that's going to be the consequence. We get great convenience, we get great tools and gimmicks and games and rewards, but human beings are going to lose their jobs. It's inevitable.
Well, there are two sides to this. Number one, you're totally right. I think the consumer, and that's what at the moment, obviously, SASPO and South Africa are very upset, and their members get affected. And that's right. They've got to stand up and make sure they get a good deal. But the consumer and their members actually, as users of bank services, benefit. They get better services. They get cheaper services. But what we found, you go back in history, and every technological change that you've found, that other jobs are created. If you just think all the way back to 1900, when the first motor car was being found out and produced, in 13 years' time, from 19 to 1913, the horse buggy industry disappeared. But you had the motor vehicle that created thousands of jobs. Similarly, just going to fairly recent Amazon is destroying thousands of jobs in shopping malls. But Amazon is creating thousands of other jobs in warehouses. There are always new jobs created, but at the end result is the consumer also gets a better service.
I mean, it's this concept of creative destruction. In order for society to move along, and there's any whole economic study on this stuff. I mean, creative destruction, you destroy one industry, but you create a whole bunch more, and humanity benefits from this. For South Africa, though, which is so short of jobs, it's a terrifying prospect. We're seeing jobs cut in every corner. What is interesting, though, and talking to the CEOs of both African Bank and Capitec in recent weeks, they're expanding branch networks. Now, is South Africa likely to be an outlier from a global perspective? On the one hand, we've got this sort of two-speed economy. One is driven by technology and apps. The other, sales forces are still very relevant when it comes to selling products like microloans and funeral policies and banking products.
It's a temporary phenomenon. So what you'll find is that Capitec, because they're still at the lower end of the market, which isn't that tech-heavy yet, and still prefers a branch. So you find that in most emerging markets, like India as well, bank branches are still growing, but at the higher end of the market, their bank branches are declining. It was interesting when I saw the Brazilian banks now, they've actually created an app which is now voice activated, because a lot of their clients in the northern parts of Brazil couldn't spell. And so there were all kinds of problems, and they didn't feel safe with an app where they had to use text. So they made a voice-activated app. So, technology finds ways of putting an app in the client's hand so he can just do what he wants to do. But a lot of it is simply education. And as, the younger generation, even in the poorer societies, very quickly adapt new to technology.
I bumped into a fund manager yesterday who was looking slightly bewildered, as fund managers often do, but this was for different reasons. And he said he'd just gone to his bank and he said, "I'd like to get a statement, please." And he was directed to a computer and told to talk to the computer. He spoke to the computer. The computer spewed out his bank statement, and it was absolutely perfect and worked wonderfully. But it hit him at that moment that the world is never going to be the same again.
Yeah, that was really my last 3 weeks that we visited a lot of banks in Europe, especially in Scandinavia and in Russia, as I said at the end. I was amazed at the speed of change in the last 3 or 4 years, how it's been accelerating. And UBS had a very good conference now on Tuesday, Wednesday, where our banks also spoke, and we are not far behind. There is one other phenomenon here that's very important. The guys who are ahead are just going to keep on creating market share, and the guys who are behind in technology are going to lose. So if you just think in Germany, it's an easy one because it's far away. Your Deutsche Bank, your Commerzbank just lose, and your IMGs in Europe, who are way ahead of the curve in terms of technology, will gain. And you're going to have the same in South Africa. You're going to have the same in every country is the banks and the insurers who are ahead of the curve in terms of technology will keep on gaining new clients and get momentum behind them.
How important are the disruptor startups? I mean, we've seen the huge growth of Tyme Bank, and I think they, at last count, said they had 750,000 customers, but they're not making a profit yet. Discovery's been slow, and it's got probably close to 30,000 customers now. Bank Zero postponed from a spring launch to a late summer launch into the new year. How important are these guys going to be in terms of disruption here?
Yeah. Generally, what we found internationally is that only 1 in 10 survive. A lot of them fail or just get taken out. The guys who've got very good technology get taken out. Now, the main thing, if you think of somebody like JP Morgan in America, they spend $11 billion per year on technology. So Jamie Dimon, when there's, let's say, at the time, or Zero, a Bank Zero, that's a startup, he will just go to his tech guys and say, I want the same by the end of the next quarter. And he's got enough software engineers who have to produce that. And I'm sure the same has happened here in South Africa, where Nedbank now already are saying they will deliver the same as Tyme Bank by the end of this year. So your smaller guys also have a disadvantage that they are ahead of the curve on one specific product. But, you know, so clients go there just to open an account and make a deposit. But then you can't have a check account you don't do it anymore. You don't have a credit card. You can't go motor vehicle finance. You can't get a mortgage. And so in the end, it's a very small number of clients who get attracted to that. Discovery have the best chance of success because they've already got a massive client base. And that is vital. So they've got data. So they can send offers and impress those clients with their offering. And they've already developed quite a suite of products. So I think even they have found it takes a lot longer than they thought, and they far exceeded their budget in terms of capital expenditure. But I think they've got enough capital behind them, enough willpower behind them to push it through, and they will succeed. But I think a lot of the smaller startups just either will get taken out or haven't got the capital behind them to survive.
Gorky, thank you very much. The head of global equities at Denko Capital, and thank you very much for coming through for us this evening. Really fascinating insights from his recent trip to Europe, and of course to Russia, to look at the banking industries there. And from a South African perspective, the big banks are fighting back. We spoke to one of the guys who is with Heidrick and struggles the other day, and he's written that book Goliath and the Fight Back, and it is large corporates, big budgets are now saying, hold on a second, we don't want to be disrupted, so we'd rather disrupt ourselves, spend lots of money internally, and they in turn are now beginning to disrupt the disruptors, to Cookie's point.